Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
January 20th, 2009, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, ISO. That's right, three simple letters, ISO. But my, how have things changed in the last couple of years in digital photography in terms of how we think of ISO ratings? So I thought it was time to revisit ISO and talk a little bit about how we should be thinking about this very important setting on any of our digital cameras, whether it be compact or digital SLRs. And of course, things are a little different in those two worlds. Compacts, probably not as much versatility in ISO settings as DSLRs. On the other hand, our modern digital SLRs give us a lot of flexibility in terms of setting the sensitivity of the image sensor. So let's touch on that today, and I've got some key points for you to kind of, you know, a little refresher that we'll all do together and maybe even argue about a little bit. Who knows? So one of the biggest changes I've noticed over the last couple of years with ISO settings is that they're no longer analogous to what we knew in the film world. It seemed to me that in the early days of digital photography, that you could think of ISO 100 on a digital SLR as kind of the same as if you were using an ISO 100 film, you know, whether it's a negative film or slide film, back in the analog days. And, you know, then you up it up to 400 on a digital camera, and image noise increased, you know, a fair amount. And it was kind of the same as, you know, shooting something like a Tri-X or T-Max on your film camera. Although the grain patterns, as you recall, for Tri-X and T-Max 400 are quite different. However, there was still that increase in a little bit of noise. And then 800 on a digital camera, you really started to see image noise just like you would on 800 film. And then 1600, a lot of image noise, the same as shooting 1600 film. So for a while there, you could really think of, you know, you could use what you knew in the film world as your guide for using your digital SLR. For compact cameras, I think, you know, that's still the same. Pretty much. Compact cameras do great at ISO 100. They start to show a little image noise around 200. Around 400, ISO 400, it's measurable. ISO 800 for a lot of digital cameras, compacts I'm talking about, is probably higher than most, you know, in terms of image noise, probably more image noise than most of us are comfortable with. And for the most part, ISO 1600 on a compact camera is just out of the question. So things haven't changed that much. And of course, the difference between a compact camera and a digital SLR has to do with its electronics, what's inside. The image sensor on a compact camera is smaller. Camera manufacturers seem to be insistent on making sure they cram as many pixels on those sensors as possible so that you have a small image sensor that has, you know, that's a 10 megapixel camera or 12 megapixel camera. Those photosites are pretty small on there. And all of that generates a lot of heat when you raise the ISO up. And of course, heat equals image noise in digital photography. For those reasons, I think more or less what we knew in the film days does apply to our thinking on compact cameras when setting the ISO. However, in the digital SLR realm, things have really changed. They've changed a lot. Digital SLRs now can, I mean, you could use, if you wanted to, on a modern digital SLR, you know, a Canon Rebel XSI, a Canon 5D Mark II, a Nikon D700, a Nikon D3, the new Olympus that I've been shooting with, the E30. All of these cameras, you could set it on ISO 400 as your everyday ISO setting, unless you're shooting landscape. But if you're just, you know, if you're shooting event photography and street shooting and, you know, the kind of the normal photography that we do, and not even think twice about it because the image quality is so good. I mean, it's so literally good that you could just leave it on 400 if you want. And a few years ago in digital photography, this would be unheard of. This would be unheard of. You would only go up to 400 when you absolutely needed to and beyond. So now, of course, with these new cameras, and I'll talk about the Olympus E30 and the Canon 5D Mark II because I've been shooting a lot with those two cameras. They're both modern generation cameras. With the Olympus, I can shoot up to 1600 with excellent image quality. And with the Canon 5D Mark II, I can go up to 3200. And I shoot at 1600 indoors for, like, you know, gymnasium work and so forth with a 5D Mark II. And I am getting fabulous image quality. So it has really changed on that end of the spectrum. And I think it's changing the way we think about our photography. Because suddenly, when I'm shooting with a digital SLR, I'm really not thinking about flash very often. Flash has become something that I need for special uses and not something that I need just because the light happens to be a little lower than I would like. So I'm using flash less and less and less in shooting existing light photography more and more. And suddenly I'm getting excited. Not suddenly, I've always been excited, but even more excited about lenses that let in more light, because this is, you know, you sort of get addicted to this whole situation. You suddenly go, wow, I can shoot existing light indoors for just about any occasion. And so then, you know, you go, I want, you know, every lens that I have on my camera to be, you know, f2.8 or faster, because that allows me to do even more indoors, and it means that I need flash even less and less. So, you know, it's my whole thinking about shooting weddings and shooting events and all that sort of stuff has really changed in the last year or so, because these cameras do so well in, you know, available light. So first, let me just reiterate, you know, in my mind what ISO is, and then let me talk about a few situations and, you know, what I would, you know, set my camera on for those situations. So ISO to me is increasing the sensitivity of my image sensor to light. ISO 100 means that it is that's the least amount of sensitivity. It's also generating the least amount of heat when I make an exposure, and I get the least amount of image noise, so I get the highest amount of quality. And where, you know, generally speaking these days I see image noise is in the continuous tones in the image, for instance, a sky and a shadow area, places like that. That's where image noise really shows up. In areas where there's a lot of detail, intricate detail, you know, the image noise sort of fits in with the detail, and, you know, you don't notice it as much. So it's more in the continuous tones. So then as you raise the ISO up, you set it to 400, 800, 1600, 3200, then, you know, each of those is essentially, you're getting a stop, an f-stop more of light that you can work with. So if you go from 100 to 400, you're essentially getting, you know, two more stops of light to work with. If you go from 400 to 1600, you're getting another two stops. 1600, ISO 1600 from ISO 100, you're getting four stops more of light. That's a lot of light. That's a lot of play. So if you were shooting indoors and the best shutter speed you could get was 1/8 of a second at ISO 100, and you move it up to 1600, you get an additional four f-stops of light to play with, more or less, so to speak. So you can go from, that means going from 1/8 to 1/15, there's one stop. 1/15 to 1/30, there's two stops. 1/30 to 1/60, there's three stops. 1/60 to 1/125 of a second, four stops. That means at ISO 1600, what you would have had to use, you know, the exposure you would have had to use at 1/8 of a second at a given f-stop, now suddenly becomes 1/125 of a second. That's huge, especially considering that, you know, most of the time we consider handheld photography is around 1/30th of a second or faster. So that easily moves you into handheld photography, even allows you to use a little bit of a telephoto lens. So that's why, you know, raising the ISO can be so helpful in certain conditions. Now, when are the times that I would raise the ISO and when are the times that I would not? Okay, and I have, so let's start with when I would. So I would increase the ISO when I'm doing handheld photography in dim lighting conditions. Let's say indoors, natural light coming in from a window, tungsten light from a lamp, shooting inside of a gymnasium, outside when the sun is going down, you know, all those sort of times. When I'm holding the camera, I would consider increasing the ISO. Another time I would consider increasing the ISO if I need more depth of field. So for instance, let's say at ISO 100 and I'm holding handheld photography and I could only at a 30th of a second, I can only get f2.8. And for the shot that I want to do, I want a little bit more information in the shot in terms of what's in focus. I want to get that aperture up to, 5.6, let's say. So, f2.8 to f4, there's one. F4 to f5.6, there's two. That's two f-stops. So I need two more f-stops of light. So I'm shooting, I shoot in aperture priority mode. And so I raise the ISO up from 100, right, to 400. 100 to 400, that would give me two more stops of light. Or if I raise it up to 800, that'd give me three more stops of light, which means then I could go, if I wanted to F8 at the same shutter speed. So raising your ISO is a way to increase the depth of field when you need a little bit more depth of field, when you need a deeper area to be in focus, for any given shutter speed. Now, the same can work when you need more shutter speed too. Let's say that depth of field isn't an issue, but you want to stop action. And so the best that you can do, let's say, is 1/60th of a second at f2.8 at ISO 100, and you want to be up to, let's say, 1/250th of a second to kind of slow down to stop action a little bit. So, 1/60th to 1/125th, there's one stop, and 1/125th to 250th, there's two stops. So again, you just go from ISO 100 to 400, that gives you two more stops of speed, and off to the races you go. So remember, a whole f-stop and a whole shutter speed setting are equal to one whole ISO setting. And once you sort of get this formula straight in your head, these relationships, then you really have complete control. You need more depth of field. You know exactly how much you have to increase your ISO to get it. You need a faster shutter speed. Same thing. So these are the times that in handheld photography, I would consider raising the ISO. Now remember, even with a digital SLR, as you raise the ISO, just keep in mind what level of image quality you need. If you're, doing a landscape and you need maximum depth of field, you want to get that flower in the front as in focus as, the mountains in the background, and you want to stop down to, f16 or f22 to do that, then raising the ISO might be one way to go about it. But if you have a lot of blue sky or something, you want to be careful. You don't want to shoot your landscape at, ISO 1600. So that's where you have to look at other ways to get around these issues. And that leads to when I would not raise the ISO. And landscape photography is right at the top of that. When landscape photography, when I want a lot of depth of field, but I also want maximum image quality, then I'm going to keep that ISO down around 100 or 200, depending on what camera I have, and put it on a tripod. That way I can have a long shutter speed, the objects aren't moving, get that depth of field that I need, and still have good image quality. So landscape photography is a time that I tend not to raise the ISO. And in fact, any time that I put a camera on a tripod, I'm thinking of not raising the ISO. Sometimes people are surprised when they look at my night photography that I recorded at ISO 100 or 200, because kind of in their brain they're thinking, well, you know, low light night photography, don't you want to be raising that ISO to make your image sensor more sensitive? And yes, if it was handheld, I would have to do that. But if I'm setting it down on a ledge or a tripod or, you know, somewhere where I can steady the camera and use the self timer, then I want that ISO low, because night photography shows off image noise more than standard, you know, street photography and event photography. And I want as little as of noise as possible in my night photography shot. So a lot of times I'll steady the camera on a tripod, keep the ISO at 100 or 200, do a timed exposure, and keep that image noise down. And as long as there aren't objects that are moving or that I care if they're moving, then I'm in great shape. So, you know, these are the sort of things that you wrestle back and forth with. So just to review, when I would raise the ISO is handheld photography in low light, to increase the depth of field, or to increase the shutter speed. Those are scenarios where I would often increase the ISO, remembering that, you know, one ISO setting is worth one whole shutter speed setting, worth one whole f-stop setting. When I don't increase the ISO is when I want maximum image quality, such as in a landscape, especially if there are continuous tones in that image, or when I'm doing really anything on a tripod, including night photography. So those are the times that I'll keep that ISO low, and that keeps the image noise down, and it makes my job a lot easier later on in post-production. Now, a lot of folks have asked me about, well, how do you feel about auto ISO? Because that's a setting that we're seeing more and more, not only on compact cameras, but now we're seeing them on digital SLRs. So here's my thinking about auto ISO. The first thing you want to do is go to your owner's manual or find the specifications for your camera online and find out what the range for auto ISO is. For example, if auto ISO on your compact camera is between 100 and 400, then it's simple. You just take a picture at a given setting at ISO 400, load it onto your computer, look at it at 100%, and see how you feel about it. If the image looks good to you, then you know that any shot that you take in auto ISO is going to be within a range of acceptability. Now, if you look at your specs and you see that auto ISO for your compact camera is between 100 and 1600, I can tell you right now, you don't need to do a shot at 1600 to know if it's within the range of acceptability, because it probably won't be. So in that case, I would say I would not use auto ISO, because there's a chance that the camera will set it to an ISO setting that you will not like. So the whole trick on auto ISO, whether it's on a compact or digital SLR, find out the specification, the range for that auto ISO. Take a look at shots shot at the highest end of that range. See how you feel about them. If you're okay with them, then auto ISO is great. If you're not okay with them, then I would stay away from auto ISO and do the settings yourself. Now, big reminder about ISO settings. This is one of the areas where, you know, sometimes you feel like as you become a better photographer, you also become a worse photographer. Have you ever had that sensation? ISO is one of the areas that will really make you feel this way. Because when you were a beginning photographer, you probably would never think about changing your ISO setting. You would just leave it on the default or auto or whatever. Okay, now you know a little bit more about what you're doing. So you have a handheld low light situation. You up the ISO to 800. Take your shots. Then you forget after that shoot to return it to 100, because that's the rule, right? Whenever you finish a shoot where you've raised the ISO, as soon as you're done with the shoot, return it to the default setting or to your, you know, the setting that you're most comfortable with. Most of the time it'll be ISO 100. But you forget to do that. So then the next day you go out, you got a landscape shoot that you want to do, you travel to this great location, you shoot all day, you get home that night, and you're looking at your pictures, and the color isn't quite as saturated, there's a little bit more image noise in the sky, and you're going, what happened? Oh no, you look at the XF data and you see that you just shot a whole day's worth of landscape at ISO 800. And that's when you just really want to take your camera and bash it up the side of your head because you feel like such an idiot. So, you know, the thing that you have to remember, when you do change the ISO setting, make sure as soon as you're done with that shoot that you return everything to the standard settings. Okay, that's a very important part of this whole equation. Then that way you won't feel like as you're becoming a better photographer that you also are becoming a worse photographer from, you know, doing bonehead mistakes like I have done more times than I would ever care to admit. Okay, so that's our quick little review on ISO settings. If you have, you know, specific questions on this, please go to the show notes and post it as a comment, because that way when I answer it there, then other people who have the same question can see it. And so that's the best way to go. And I'm more than happy to pick up this conversation in the show notes for this podcast. And of course, you find the show notes by going to www.thedigitalstory.com, thedigitalstory.com. And just click on show notes tab at the top, and that'll take you right to where you need to go. Okay, now I got a couple other things I want to cover real quick, and this is just sort of a business. First of all, some of you who follow me on Twitter or Facebook, and on Twitter, by the way, my handle, as they say, is Derek_story. Easy way to find me. We'll know that interesting thing happened last week. Part of my work in life is I was the digital media evangelist for O'Reilly Media, which is a technical publishing company located in Sebastopol, California. And they had a major reorg last week. As part of the reorganization, they actually closed the digital media division. It went poof, went away, went gone. And they actually, you know, the way that we found out about this is that they called a meeting with our department, and in that meeting they let us know what they're going to do. They had an HR person there, and each of us were handed our packets and notified that we were, as of that moment, no longer working for the company. So companies have to do this sometimes, especially in hard times. And, you know, I'll spare you my opinion whether, you know, I thought this was the best way to go about, you know, making the adjustments they wanted to make or not. It doesn't really make any difference. It's not my company. But the fact is that, so I'm no longer affiliated with O'Reilly Media, other than they're still my publisher for my books, but everything else is kaputz. So if you were ever contacting me through O'Reilly Media using my email or my phone there, don't, because it will go into some sort of black hole that we'll never see again. The best way to get a hold of me either is through the digital story or via Twitter. Those two ways work great. And so now I'm, you know, looking at, okay, what am I going to do with that chunk of time? That was my salary and my health care benefits and all that sort of stuff. What am I going to do to, you know, replace what I lost there? And I'm in the middle of that right now. In the meantime, I'm going to continue, obviously, to push forward on the new stuff I wanted to do on the digital story for 2009. I'm going to continue doing video training with lynda.com. I'm going to continue writing for Macworld magazine, and I'm going to continue working on the other projects that I have and that I like. So probably in terms of how this affects you, probably not much at all. But I did want to give you a heads up on that, and that, you know, now I'm really the digital story, and my other hat for O'Reilly Media I wear no more. I also want to remind you that the photo assignment for this month, for January, is about face, and we're looking at interesting new views on portraits. So what we want to avoid is a shot looking pointed where the camera's pointed directly at someone's face, standard straight shot. And what we're more interested in is something from a different angle. So you have till the end of this month, to the end of January, to send in your submission. And if you have a question about how to do that, just click on the submissions button on The Digital Story, and it'll give you all the info that you need. And grab shots, still looking for grab shots, want grab shots, send me your grab shots, and I'll get them lined up in the queue, and I'm probably going to run one this week. So, always looking for grab shots. And then the last thing is the site redesign project is coming along nicely. I just looked at some new, mock-ups or templates or, whatever you want to call it. And I really like the way the new look is coming along. We're doing two things at once. We're also beefing up the infrastructure underneath. So that's rolling along, and we are going to stay on track with that. So that's going to wrap it up for me this week, my first week as a total freelance, solo, digital story kind of guy. I got lots of things that I'll be working on for you guys. So stay tuned. I'll see you on Twitter. I'll see you on iTunes. I'll see you everywhere else, Facebook. And go take some shots, and let's reconvene next week. Okay, bye-bye now. Talk to you later.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.